This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hey everybody, usually I have a rotating roster of guests, a rogues gallery, if you will, of local yokels. No, they're not really yokels either, but they're yokel folks. Wait, local folks, that's better. And one consistent co-host, usually, and that's John. But today, I've kicked all of them out, and sitting right in front of me, not really, in Ohio, is the legendary Spacek, a.k.a. Mitch Ansara. That's not his real name. Spacek is his real name. Mitch Ansara, not his real name.
Mm-hmm.
Say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody. What's shaking? It's good to be here in, I want to say, Texas?
You want to.
Thanks for having me. I don't know where you live, dude.
So, let me ask you. Why are you such a legend? How are you such a legend? I said legendary. That's a fact.
I guess I'm a legend in your mind and my mind. That's two people. So I don't know about the rest of the world, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah. What is it that makes you such a legend?
What a stupid question, dude.
What is it?
What makes you a legend?
It's your skills in illustration and comedy.
How about saying something like, you know, I've known Mitch for about 10 years online. We met on Threadless while we were both designing t-shirts.
I was going to get there.
I've always admired him.
I was going to get there.
Explain why you're so great.
It's putting you on the spot. It makes for an interesting show.
Here's a list. Number one, I'm very quick on my feet. I always have an answer. End of list.
No. The other part of that list is that you draw so incredibly well.
Oh, you're very kind. That means a lot coming from you. Thank you.
I'm grateful for that. But really, I want to brag about you.
Okay, go for it.
Everybody, Mitch's art is, I don't know. I don't know what your day job is. I don't know. You're so private in everything about that stuff. And you're just this funny, charismatic personality.
Oh, please.
As far as I've known you. But your artwork is like synonymous with all of that.
That is so sweet of you to say. I am a freelance artist all day, every day. So
you're like me, except immensely more talented.
Shut
up. That's awesome.
Andrew, shut up. That's so weird. Man, dude.
Okay. Enough.
You're also very talented, and you have a very interesting personality in your work, and you are very opinionated, which I've always liked about you. Even when I totally disagree with your opinion and I just want you to stop talking, but I appreciate that you have those opinions. It's great that, you know, you're not so wishy-washy.
You know, I was thinking about this. You mentioned this to me the other day, and I was thinking why I have the opinions as, I guess, confidently that I do. Not what the opinions are. It doesn't matter what they are. But the confidence that I have behind my opinions is because of, this is, let's get serious time.
Okay, let's do it.
The life that I've had leading up to now, and it's not online. This is all offline stuff.
Okay.
I was not well regarded by my peers, even family. So my opinions would be like stopped immediately. My words would be like, shush, don't listen to that guy.
Wow.
So I learned, instead of just being like insecure about them, I just always been in my head. So I learned to know what I'm thinking about, to really examine what I'm thinking about. So instead of just off the cuff saying something that's half informed, I try to get all the information that I can, and if I agree with it or whatever, I present my opinion with a confidence, because how else is anybody ever gonna really take me seriously?
Sure, so, that's great.
That's it.
That's great, man.
That's it.
I appreciate that, and I'm also glad that I never told you to shut up, because that would have cut you to the core, and I would feel miserable. Well, this is nice.
Artists are
sensitive.
This is
what the whole podcast is. Just us kissing each other's butt and having a private conversation, learning about each other, because I'm okay with that.
For all the world to hear.
This movie kind of stunk, and I'm upset that you made me watch it. But I will thank you at a certain point, when we get to a certain point, because there's something about this movie that brought back a lot for me.
Oh, okay. Well, what is it that we just watched?
We watched a little film called Johnny Zombie.
They say you only get one chance at life. But for childhood sweethearts Missy and Johnny, true love will never die.
My boyfriend's back.
He came back from the dead for me.
He's a stinking zombie, you idiot.
He may be dead.
Rats.
But his heart still beats for the girl that he loves.
I would love to go to the prom with you.
Go for it, Johnny!
pretty damned active for a dead guy.
My Boyfriend's Back, rated PG-13.
AKA My Boyfriend's Back. That was the original title.
Or the beginning of so many people's careers.
It's a true fact. Before we jump in, can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I am a very kind of weird statistic guy. I like to be on IMDb all the time and kind of cross-reference stuff.
Sure.
And I just want to say right off the bat, the cast of this movie shares 3 Academy Awards and 31 different Law & Order appearances, which is bonkers, and I love it.
Okay.
Can you guess what the 3 Academy Award winners are?
Matthew McConaughey.
I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm.
Renee Zellweger.
She was not in the final cut, I don't think, was she?
No, sir. No, she wasn't.
Okay.
Philip Hoffman.
What are you looking at, dirtbag?
Philip Seymour.
There you go,
Hoffman.
Philip Hoffman.
And you're saying there's another one.
The last one's hard.
The last one.
Mm-hmm. It's an old person. Older person.
Well, it's not Edward Herman.
We don't want the neighbors to think ill of us.
And it's not.
Bless his soul,
yes.
Yeah,
rest in peace. Man, when that happened, I got all super sad because Gilmore Girls, right?
Yeah. So, I think a lot of people did, even if they didn't know him by name.
Yeah, they were like, that guy, because he's literally one of those that guys.
Oh, the dad from Richie Rich. I miss him so much.
Was he in
the
that?
Last?
I didn't watch that.
Yeah, he was. It was something. Macaulay Culkin at his finest.
Yeah, Lost
it
Boys,
was
of
the
course.
Last, of course. Another great horror comedy. The last winner was Cloris Leachman.
Flesh of the living. The more you eat, the more time you have.
Of all people, from The Last Picture Show.
Really? Because I was thinking Bob Balaban, but yeah. You're saying Cloris Leachman.
Would I lie to you,
wow.
Andrew?
No, you wouldn't. Well, yes, you would, probably. Just for a joke, though.
Probably would. Yeah, only if it were funny.
I'm thinking it would be humor-tinged.
Tinged.
So, the movie Johnny Zombie.
Yeah.
Tell me the synopsis, if you will.
Okay, well, this really creepy, quiet dude is in love with this really pretty girl in school who he's loved since he was like 6, and then he dies, and then he comes back, and then they're in love, and a lot of hilarity ensues. It's called Warm Bodies.
This is Warm Bodies like 1.0 or something.
Yeah. Hey, what was that one with Anton Yelchin where his girlfriend died and came back?
Burying the Ex.
Yeah.
Directed by Joe Dante.
Yep.
So
I liked that. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I appreciated it.
Yeah, there's some sort of charm about it.
Mm-hmm.
So this came out in 1993. You can see all of the fashions that I wore. Not all of the fashions. I didn't wear everybody's outfits. Like, that's ridiculous. I didn't have that much clothes like that. But I was probably the same age as the characters being portrayed at the time.
Ooh. I was only 10 years old.
Oh. I always thought that you were an old soul.
I am an old soul, but in a very young and attractive body.
So that's the bare bones of the story.
Bones.
You
dead people.
When I suggested doing the show, you picked this movie.
I did?
Yes, you picked this movie because I was going through things that I had on my list, and I was like, this movie, and you're like, I can do My Boyfriend's Back.
That's so weird.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, why? Why did you choose it? Not that I'm lamenting,
well, this
I'm wondering.
This is a really funny comedy of errors because I really did not want to watch this movie. I must have been drunk when I suggested it. I would have much rather done, like, Swamp Thing or Head or Earth Girls Are Easy, which is one of my favorite movies ever made. But I'm glad I watched it.
What you did say to me was...
That is so weird.
I can do My Boyfriend's Back. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and I don't remember liking it. I remember not liking it. So
yep,
I was like, I guess he's got the time between having seen it that last time and now. That'll work.
Mm.
And so I agreed. And then you were like, oh, crap. So, okay, maybe
it's
you
very
were not going to
feedback. Though. I was right. I was totally right about me.
You don't like it.
I remember watching it a bunch. Like, maybe it had to be like 94 or 95 on video.
Yeah.
And I could not remember why until the scene later in the movie where the lead actress, Tracy Lynn, I think is her
yes.
name.
Yes, sir.
She's like in this very skimpy Gilligan's Island Marianne kind of outfit.
I love you, Johnny. That's why I want you to eat me.
And I'm like, oh, right, that's why I liked this movie, because I was a little pervert. Oh, okay. Right. It all makes sense. Yeah. So tell me your experience.
I don't remember watching this movie when it came out, and I don't remember the first time I saw it. I was an adult at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a young adult. So it was when it first came out on DVD.
Oh, wow.
I bought the thing based on what, and I don't know. I don't remember seeing it on TV. Mm-hmm. I worked in a video store, but I don't remember renting it or checking it out free, you know?
Sure.
Nothing. But I liked the macabre concept of it.
I mean, on the surface, it sounds good, yeah.
You know, Peter Jackson was approached to do this movie?
I think we both read the same Internet Movie Database trivia about it. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. Can you imagine that? Because he did Dead Alive and Frighteners. So this would be more directed like Frighteners, I think.
I think he made the right decision in passing on it. I would like to see the script, actually, before it got into Bob Balaban's hands, because I'm wondering if maybe he added a little comedy to it. I don't know.
Well, did you see Parents by Bob Balaban?
No.
Yeah, Parents, starring the mother in this. What's her name?
Mary Beth Hurt.
And Randy Quaid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's another horror comedy, right? Or is it not even a comedy?
It's not even a comedy. Okay. It's set in the 50s. Macabre cannibal parent movie sort of thing. And it's a little child who comes into the realization that his parents are cannibals.
That's another one I haven't seen since a long, long time ago.
That's Bob Balaban before this movie.
Wow.
And that movie is really bloody and disturbing. So it's strange to me that he went from that to this. And, well, it's not strange because it's Touchstone, right? Disney.
Oh.
Yeah. But what's strange is that the edges are kind of mostly softened, dulled.
Oh, yeah. It seems like it's not really directed at young people. It's kind of like what an older person would imagine a young person would think is funny. That's the kind of vibe I got. I don't know about you.
It's interesting because it's directed by an old person and it's populated by a bunch of old people.
Yep. There are so many old character actors in this movie, it's unbelievable. Like, every character is the guy you say, oh, I know that guy from something, but I don't know his name.
Right. You know who Dick Miller is, right?
Oh, yeah. In all the Joe Dante movies.
You know, it's a funny world, Harv. Almost nobody's what they seem to be.
Yeah, so Dick Miller seems like the perfect character actor to play the cemetery groundskeeper.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
That would have been perfect. I could see it. Elby brought it up. She said it first. And I was like, what? Oh, my gosh. So I couldn't stop seeing him when I was watching this again. And it was just my mind, like, wishing so hard to see Dick Miller as the caretaker. That would have been perfect. Because this guy's soft. Dick Miller is a little bit harder edged, you know, in his presentation of dialogue.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been more fun to see. But anyway.
This might have been a much better movie had Joe Dante done it. I mean, if you take the good stuff in
Burying the X
and kind of mush it into this, that might be something.
Right.
Yeah.
I was always annoyed with this movie because it's called My Boyfriend's Back. The kid dies trying to impress her, gets shot, gets buried, comes back to life. He's not her boyfriend.
They're not boyfriend and girlfriend, yeah.
It always bothered me, and even more so, they never used the song.
I kept waiting for it, but nope, not gonna happen. We're not gonna pay for the rights to that song.
All right, let's go through some positives before we hit the negatives.
Okay, yeah, sure. There are some things that I like about this movie. You start.
I like his best friend.
Really?
I like his delivery of the reactions.
Oh, you can kiss that calf muscle goodbye, fat man.
Okay,
you're talking about actor Danny Zorn,
who once
appeared on Law & Order.
I've never seen him before or since.
I've only seen him on Law & Order.
You're saying Law & Order. He was one of the Law & Order guys.
Dude, this movie is full of Law & Order people. I love it. The guy who played the caretaker was like a recurring lawyer anyway.
Okay, all right.
I'm kind of a Law & Order head. So you are saying of all the people in this movie who you appreciate the best friend character the most?
Not the most, no. It's more so the delivery of the lines by almost everybody in the cast. They're very cavalier about the subject of this dead kid trying to date this girl. Even if they're opposed to it, they're somewhat articulate, or even more than somewhat articulate. And they're also bumpkins, some of them. It's a juxtaposition of the concept and the context, and the literal delivery of those lines that I appreciate.
I want to speak to that point, but I also have to apologize for just crapping on you.
Go ahead.
About the best friend character, because he has actually one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. When the main dude and he are planning to set up a fake robbery at the convenience store where the main girl works, the best friend says very calmly and very funnily,
"I think you should get some therapy." "I do."
Yes.
And I laugh my little butt off.
I like his delivery on everything.
You were right.
Okay.
Also, speaking to the content and context, you're very right. This whole movie kind of has an absurdist tone, like, say, Heathers or something, but it's not really made apparent until halfway through the movie, like when he rises from the grave and starts talking to the gravedigger, and the gravedigger's totally chill about it, like,
"Oh, hi there. I'm Murray.
Johnny Dingle.
Nice to meet you, Johnny Dingle. Oh, look at you. You're a mess. Just crawled out of the grave, did you?"
"I guess so."
"Isn't that something? Been a long time since anybody came back from the dead. I think the last time was Thanksgiving. About 15 years ago."
At that point, I was like, oh, this is gonna be silly. So there's really no stakes and anybody can just do whatever they want.
Okay, I see.
Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, I do. Here's another positive. The dog is always eating food off the plate that the lady is about to serve.
Yes, I wrote that down. The absent-minded mom keeps making food and the dog keeps eating it without her knowing. That's just funny.
It's just this amazing tiny little detail that I don't know how many people pick up, because I'm not all those people. I'm just me.
That was great.
And it's good to know that you picked it up and enjoyed it, because that always made me laugh.
Yeah, I really appreciated that.
I'm not always about, I have to be Criterion Collection comedy, whatever those are, like a Wes Anderson movie, I suppose.
Chasing Amy.
I sometimes do laugh at stupid things because it tickles my stupid bone.
Sure.
Whatever that stupid is.
I know where your stupid bone is. It's in your pants. Anyway, like when the mom says,
"Picked up something special for you at the supermarket."
Oh boy.
And they all go in the kitchen and it's a little 3-year-old kid on a serving platter. That was pretty funny too.
Right.
I don't know.
It's everything in how it's presented. It's like a perfect storm of, this is really lame and dorky and goobery and also genuinely funny, and I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would put this movie on way later, you know, in the mid-90s, till before I was married, as like comfort food, because it's that kind of a movie. It's like a comforting sort of dumb thing. Oh, I'd also do that with Dune, so I mean, there's my tastes.
Yeah, we disagree on that. I think I appreciate the things I appreciate in this movie, and the things I don't like, I really don't like. So,
are we still at the appreciation yet? Are we still digging through? Is there more to appreciate?
Oh, there's more. My absolute 100% favorite part of this movie are the daydreams that the kid has.
Of course, those would be yours. Your favorites.
What? What does that mean?
Well, you already said it.
That was a little pervert. Yeah, well, there's that. And there's also the first one where he's in school and he's daydreaming that he's at a pep rally and they're having sex in front of the whole school. And then a referee blows a whistle and says,
"Oh, what a flag on the play!
Personal foul. The challenger, Johnny Dingle, is not using a regulation size unit."
That is funny because he's talking about his wiener. It's very, very smart humor, and kind of, I appreciate that kind of thing.
Okay, slight diversion. So this is a bit of a sex comedy. I mean, it's got the whole adolescent hormonal rage thing going. Of that kind of genre, were you a big viewer? I don't want to use Freudian slips. Were you an avid viewer
I was an average-sized viewer. I mean, I did okay. Speaking of, I love that kind of stuff back then.
Like Porky's, is that something that you went for? Zap?
Sure, I did. I mean, there are much better ones, like now, and more nuanced stuff, like Drive.
Just One of the Guys
was really good.
Actually, Sex Drive was really good.
Oh my, I love Just One of the Guys. That's one of my favorites ever. And speaking of that kind of film, in relation to this, remember Once Bitten with Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
This feels like kind of a crappy remake of that. Like, that had very good ideas. It's kind of the same thing, but not as good. I don't know. That's just what I think.
Now, Once Bitten was vampire, and this one is zombie kid.
And vampires, vampires are more sexual in nature. Like, zombies, the idea that this girl wants to kiss and fool around with the guy who's falling apart is super gross.
I don't know. Tracy Lind is a knockout, and he's a goober. He's Andrew Lowry. He's a goober.
That's true.
And
I feel like they...
He's always played kind of goobers or the side character.
I feel like he's kind of a proto Jim Carrey in this. Like, the producers of this movie saw Once Bitten and they're like,
get me a Jim Carrey type. Get me a skinny, goofy nerd. But make sure he...
You know, he was in the Clerks TV show. Right, he was Dante. Show.
Andrew, I'm on top of this dude. He's like, he doesn't have the charisma to carry a movie like this, I think. And it's weird, you said about Tracy Lind, she actually is very good. I think she should be the lead of this movie and give the second banana thing to Lowry over here.
Yeah, I agree with you. She's actually, we were trying to figure out why he's so into her character, other than her being a knockout, her being very, very pretty. When he describes it at the end, that he's been in love with her for so long.
You're the kindest, smartest, most beautiful girl I've ever known.
Of all that, we only really see the kindness come through in her character. And I was like, okay, that works for me. Okay, I can see him really actually being like, I got it, you're super pretty. And that's what most of the movie focuses on. Is you're super pretty. But how she plays the character is really nice and gentle. And she's got no pretense to her. She doesn't have the pretty girl pretense.
Yeah, I think she did a lot more with the character than what was on the paper. Yeah. And the whole time I was watching this, I was thinking, what do I recognize that girl from? And of course, it was Fright Night Part 2, which is also a movie that I remember fondly but don't really think about too often.
Yeah.
She's good.
It's the lesser of the two. But yeah, it's she replaces, and I like her playing that character in Fright Night 2 more than the original.
I agree.
Portrayal.
Marcy Darcy, what was her name?
Yep.
Darn it, I can't remember.
So now we get to the negatives, I think.
Oh, great.
Dump on it. Come on. What do you got for me?
I don't know. I think I pretty much covered it. It's good. It's good, not great. Like the absurdist tone thing that I mentioned before. Like it's not really laid out right off the bat. That this is going to be a surreal, kind of weird movie. The end of the movie, a lot of stuff pays off that wasn't set up in the first half. Like the whole heaven thing. He goes to heaven and is given a second chance, but that's the first we see of God or heaven or any of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I blame Bob Balaban.
So I'm thinking that you might have wanted to have a more lifeless ordinary slant to this.
Lifeless? Oh, lifeless ordinary. What was that one?
Angels try to get Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz to...
No, I don't want that slant. I'm saying the whole heaven thing wasn't really necessary. Like, it's so weird that a lot of these 80s and 90s comedies and straight horror movies, they kind of have an occult or magical element that will make all this weird stuff happen. But in this movie, it just happens, and we're supposed to accept it as viewers right off the bat.
I think that end scene with the heaven is trying to make sense of why he popped up.
Yeah, but how about like a little tease of that storytelling wise beforehand? Or like the fact that he's in love with her, he kept that gift from her 6th birthday party all these years. They could have referenced that earlier. I don't know. I'm not a screenwriter. Look, I'm an artist. I draw pictures.
Well, you could be. You tell stories with pictures, sir. You could be
goodness.
A screenwriter.
You're right, Andrew. I'm going to stop this podcast right now and start my screenwriting career. Goodbye.
Hammer it out. Get out that old-timey ding, typewriter. Ding, ding, ding.
So, why don't you say something negative about it after I crapped on it this whole time?
Okay, so it's basically the dorkiness of it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'm not too keen on is the comic book art. I kind of get what they're trying to do. They're trying to do a Creepshow sort of thing or a Tales from the Crypt sort of thing.
I made a note of that. I was going to hope we were going to talk about that.
I don't really like to crap on other artists. Not even you.
Oh, gee. Thanks.
There's nothing to crap on with you, so.
Ooh.
Other artists like this guy... He's, like, totally pro, but when I think of Tales from the Crypt or macabre-style comics or eerie or whatever, I don't think of this guy's artwork. This guy, I tried to find his artwork, and I couldn't really tell if that was the same illustrator because it looks like two different styles. And
it's very clean. It's
this looks like it looks like the guy like he worked for Now Comics. Do you remember that in the 80s and 90s?
No, what was that?
It was like a precursor to Image. It was one of those smaller companies. I don't even know the titles of the comics, but his artwork is very reminiscent of that, and I've always thought so. Also, as an 18-year-old, I used to hang out like a complete loser in a comic book store.
Oh, boy.
And just hang out.
I
was one of those
guys. I can't relate to that. Ugh.
For a year and a half. And then I was like, oh, I should stop this because I'm awful.
Why? Do what you love, Andrew. Don't be ashamed of yourself. You should go back to that same comic book shop right now.
It's like thousands of miles away.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
And probably closed down.
Yeah, well, the economy.
So that's why I recognize the kind of artwork. If it's not the same guy, it looks very similar. And it just doesn't look like Alex Toth was in Creepy.
One of my favorite artists.
Jack Davis did Tales from the Crypt stuff. That's what I really, and there's a bunch of others too, from that early 70s, late 60s.
EC kind of Comics. Yeah.
Cartooning. That seems totally appropriate, and this guy's artwork didn't seem appropriate at all, except for a couple of silhouettes.
It was more like a New Kids on the Block comic. Do you remember stuff like that? Or like...
Oh, wow.
Very clean. But I didn't like the storytelling element of the comic book. I thought it was kind of shoehorned in, and they threw in a lot of exposition that could have been handled better, I guess. That's what I say. As a professional screenwriter, that's my opinion.
You have a lot of clout in Hollywood.
Can we just stop right now and say, we mentioned earlier that Matthew McConaughey pops up in this movie. I think it was his first
official movie, right? Yes, it was their screen debut of, well, Renee Zellweger, but she was cut. Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman and Matthew Fox.
Philip? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you something. Matthew Fox and Philip Hoffman, as he's credited, are acting their little butts off.
Come here, you sticky dead Yahoo toucher!
I've never seen Matthew Fox work so hard. I saw Bone Tomahawk this week.
Oh, gosh.
Which I love. But he's very plain and measured. And in this movie, he's really giving you everything he's got, I guess. He's trying.
Yeah, his big scene where he's actually got three major scenes. And he's got two scenes where... One.
It's not her fault. She was taken in by his wily, decaying ways.
That's not true, Buck.
You don't even know what you're saying.
And then the other, that she's seduced by the zombie kid, because who wouldn't be?
Right, of course.
And see, this is like the whole attitude of the movie. It's just silly like that. Before this last scene that he was in, I was like, why is he such... treated like the jerk character, really? I mean, his buddy, Philip Hoffman, is the jerk character.
Yeah.
Whose little kid version, by the way, is probably the worst.
What are you looking at, dirtbag?
No, you're perfect. That was perfect.
What are you looking at, dirtbag?
It was like very straight. But you did it how it should have been.
Sorry. Like,
not only are you a great screenwriter, you are and cartoonist, you are also an award-winning actor.
Gosh. Well, really? Thanks. I hate to give a line reading to my cast, but Philip Seymour Hoffman has a really funny death in this movie that I actually did remember from when I was a kid. He busts open, in case of emergency, break glass, fire axe thing, and lifts it above his head to smash the zombie main character and kill him again, but accidentally smashes it into his own head, and it's very funny. And everybody laughed.
Yeah.
And it leads to one of my other favorite lines of the movie. After Philip Seymour Hoffman kills himself, the main zombie guy, what the heck is his name? Dingle? Something Dingle?
Yeah, Johnny Dingle.
Johnny Dingle. Of course, Johnny
Dingle. Remember Johnny Zombie, come on.
Yeah, what was I thinking? So the main girl runs up and she says,
"Oh my God, how could you? You ate Chuck!"
And he's like,
"Not all of him."
Yeah.
And that is probably one of my top three gags in the whole movie. Cool story, Mitch.
That's all true. It all happened.
It reminds me of in Brain Dead or Dead Alive, the line, "Your mother ate my dog." I don't know.
Yep.
That's it. That's what happens.
All
right, folks.
You're bringing it back to Peter Jackson, and I just kind of want to see how he would have handled it.
Sure.
That would have been weird.
Agreed.
It would have been bloodier, I'm sure. More macabre.
That's a true fact.
So I do want to know if this, especially with the comic, if they were really wanting to make it, yeah, obviously, right? Like a Tales from the Crypt thing, but it's neutered in such a way.
Sure. That might go back to what you said about it being Touchstone picture? I didn't know that was owned by Disney.
Yeah, Touchstone is Disney. Touchstone, Hollywood Pictures, and, of course, Walt Disney.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense because I'm kind of a completist. When I see a movie like this, I want to learn everything I can about it. So I listen to every single crappy song on the soundtrack. And the love theme is by a band called MMC, which is the 90s iteration of the Mickey Mouse Club. And I thought,
That's
weird.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense now. So thank you.
Well, you've suffered, to the audience, you've suffered a little bit of that song just now. So that is nuts, actually. I was wondering, where is this music coming from? Because back in the day, pop radio, I listened to 99.1. That was R&B, hip-hop, and pop. And I dug it. And then I was, like, weaned off of that. But I was still familiar with pop acts. And I just assumed this was a movie, like, I don't know, what is it, session studio thing, or like somebody's cousin?
Right.
They do this in Hollywood all the time, right? These nothing throwaway bands.
None of these bands or songs are anyone of note. Like, it was just probably whatever the Disney record label at that time, whatever bands they had that they could throw on there without paying extra money. And none of them are very good.
You heard the Earth Girls Are Easy podcast.
I did.
You heard my jaw drop, basically, about Jesus and Mary Chain.
Sure.
That was in 88. Why couldn't they have done something so awesome, and they could have probably, as that? For this movie,
I don't know.
It just befuddles me. This is a macabre film.
Yeah.
Throw some alternative distorted guitar stuff. Throw some, I don't know, Ravenettes weren't around at the time, but that would seem appropriate context-wise.
It's very strange.
But dang, man.
I think it all comes down to, like, what you said about Disney and it being neutered and all the edges were sanded off of this story. And it's just, it ends up kind of flat in a way. Yeah, that's my opinion.
And in the bookend with the heaven thing, you're right. It doesn't need to happen. It doesn't need to happen. It could just be like a Twilight Zone sort of ending where it actually transitions back to the scene where all of that was just a possibility of what could have happened.
All right, I'm vindicated. And I was instead, right. The heaven scene was unnecessary. Go Mitch.
It was completely unnecessary. I do appreciate the yelling British guy in it.
Yes, the guy.
Or whatever the scene is.
The guy from Back to School, one of my favorite movies of all time. I don't know if you've seen that with Rodney Dangerfield.
I have. Favorite, eh?
One of. I think his name's Paxton. Paxton Whitehead or something like that. It's true.
Yeah, he's got a very good voice. His voice is awesome.
When you die, you are supposed to come directly here, where we pass judgment and send you to heaven or hell.
So I think they used them well in the scene. I just don't think the scene was necessary at all. Like you said, you're vindicated.
Oh, that makes me so happy. This was totally worth it. It's totally worth all my friends. So, when all my friends listen to this and make fun of me and my stupid voice.
Yeah, they'll probably make fun of me more. Your voice isn't stupid, by the way. You've got a golden throat.
Oh, gee.
You should sing some songs. You should do all of the songs that William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy did on their Golden Throat throughout records, albums, LPs, and cassettes.
The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins by Leonard Nimoy.
All of them. You should do his music to this. It's an instrumental, but you should still sing it. Music to Watch Space Girls Go By.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. Okay, I'm done. What else is going on? We're coming up on the 2-hour mark for the podcast.
Yeah, well,
for the
we're actually pretty close to the end. You have a recommendation to make or detract. What would you do for this film? To the general audience.
You're saying if I could change something about it?
I was actually saying if you would recommend it to people, but let's go with yours first.
Okay, first, I would not have a Disney company produce it. I like your idea of maybe a Joe Dante or Peter Jackson kind of taking the reins of this. And would I recommend it? I would not recommend it to the casual viewer. I think you're better off not seeing it. But if you're a horror fan or a fan of weird movies, you definitely have to see it at some point.
So you just said weird movies.
It is weird.
So I am assuming then that you do think this fits the criteria.
Sure.
I'm glad.
Exactly.
We're already through the episode, and what if it didn't, right?
Now that would be a twist. That's a real Twilight Zone twist right there. Oh my God, what if I died right now, and I went to the pearly gates up in heaven, and they said, we're going to send you back to Earth, and you can make the right decision. And the right decision was to never record the podcast episode.
Dang it!
What a twist!
Or would it just be about the show or the movie? Because we could pick a different title in that scenario.
That's true. What do you think?
It's basically, no, really, it's basically the same thing that you say. Like, if
mm-hmm.
it's an if. It's sure. an if recommendation. If you like these elements, zombies, mm-hmm. macabre, maybe Tales from the Crypty sort of things, then you might get a kick out of it. Also, I always throw this in with older movies like this. It might be a little bit of a nostalgia kick,
sure.
and I don't usually like
I know you're
stuff,
not a fan of nostalgia.
As far as like a time capsule of how people dressed in 1992-93,
mm-hmm.
that movie is it. I mean, it's not, it doesn't have any goth kids running around, so it's not actually accurate.
Right.
But for the most part, it's accurate of all the normies out there.
Normies.
Except for her, I swear, her outfits are mostly great.
Yeah, she's probably one of the best parts of this movie. Like I said, I wish she were the main character. That's what I should have changed about it. Hmm.
Yeah, you can't go back, though.
Oh,
sorry,
no.
You can't.
I have to live with my decision for
now. All right. Well, I'll make it an exception. So, yeah, watch it, maybe. It's kind of funny. It's got humor.
Yeah.
Real, actual humor.
I would recommend, yeah, I would say.
But it's also...
There is some funny stuff.
Last thing, I don't know who this was made for, though.
Yes.
It's like a teen movie, but you said older people. And I don't know who this really was made for.
It's like the executives at Disney are saying, hey, I bet you kids will love this. And kids were like, nope.
I don't think this movie did anything in the theater.
Before we go, before you wrap it up, I just want to discuss real quick how weird it is that comedic actor Bob Balaban directed this movie. And parents. That I did not know. That is so bonkers to me. Because I've loved him, like on Seinfeld and Monuments Men. And I could not finish that movie because I didn't think it was great. Go on. I love you, Bob Balaban.
Yeah, the weird thing is the Bob Balaban director thing. I know Parents, and I knew, I was like, okay. So I did actually see Parents before this movie. So I knew that he could pull out the messed up nature of a horror movie. And then this, what? What? This is a very what movie.
What?
But I enjoy it for some strange, weird way. I tried to explain it in this podcast, but I don't know if I succeeded.
I think you did. You did a great job.
But it's not a good movie, I can't
say
that.
We're like at 95% agreement.
Got a lot of good
point.
Ingredients. Yeah, so that's
totally.
It. Yeah, all right. So I do have a question for
God!
You.
Ugh, it never ends.
For everybody out there, one question.
Right.
How can we find your stuff on the internet?
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you to ask. You could find me at spacesick.com, SPACESICK. I hope I spelled that right. Or I'm at Space Mitch on Instagram.
There you go, kids. On that note, I bid you all adieu.
Goodbye, everybody.
Good night.
Shut up. Andrew, shut up.